thank you, Susan, for coming forward to do this. I'm quite curious how you got to hear about this invitation and the work that Green and Women are doing for the archive.
Oh, well, it was the when they did the anniversary march.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the publicity for it, and I saw a photo that they were using for publicity, and I thought, that's me. So I contacted them and said, gave them the names of the four women in the photo, and then that's how they contacted me. So
oh, great. Oh that's so interesting. Did you join the walk at any point?
Well, we met them. I live in Bristol, so we met them in Bristol. Yeah.
I
didn't actually walk, but we just, you know, there's a little group of us met them. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen that on the the videos.
Yes.
So you live in Bristol now. Were you around in Bristol at the time of Greenham, or were you in another part of the country?
No, I was living in Exeter then.
God, Susan, I was a worker at Exeter Women's Centre.
Well, I worked, but you know, it's funny, I thought your name's familiar. I worked for Women's Aid for quite a long time, and I was in the Exeter Women's Peace Group and all the women's things like that. Yeah. Yes, I was in Exeter until 88, but for the last 3 years, I was doing my OT training, and I had to give up all my political activity.
Yeah.
In time, but also it was a bit tricky. College didn't like you being political, really. So I didn't. I wasn't as active from about 85. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, another introductory question. Anything else you want to say a bit about your background? But one of the things that varies totally is what did you have family support? Where maybe you were brought up in a politically active family? Maybe you're a Quaker. What was your route into this?
Nothing really. I mean, there's nothing in my background. I went to university. I was part of the women's movement. You know, the 1970s women's movement was happening. So I was in a women's group for that. And then I'm trying to think various bits. And then I ended up in Exeter. And then I had my son in 1980. And I was on my own, so I brought him up on my own, and I must have been in women's groups then, and they needed someone to help out at the women's refuge, and that's how I got involved with that. I mean, I've been involved in setting up a refuge in Sheffield, but that was just when it was squatting buildings to provide refuges, so it had moved on quite a bit by then, and basically for those years I worked for Women's Aid. I was working part-time doing the admin and the finances for them and things like that. And then I went to do my training in 85. So it was kind of 80 to 85, really.
Right. So that right from the beginning.
Yeah. So the first time I went to Greenham was for the Embrace the Base in December 1982. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of Bristol connections.
This was Exeter.
Exeter. So your first experience really was going up for the Embrace the Base. Do you want to talk about that? Did that have a big impact on you?
Yes, I mean, it was tricky because my dad's quite, well, he was a Conservative councillor, so he's quite active in the Tory party. And my son was like two and a half then. So they live they were living in Slough then. So I'd gone up to stay with them, and I was going to go up from there. And my mum was going to look after my son for the day. And I'd sort of fabricated this story that I was meeting some friends at Reading. Never questioned it because they lived in London, but I said, I'm meeting some friends in Reading. And of course, then on the news from early morning on, women are congregating in Newbury near Reading. And he suddenly put two and two together. And I'm literally walking out the door to get the train. And he's, you know, saying, I forbid you to go. So I said, well, I'm going whatever. And I don't really want to take my son to somewhere like that, but if that's what you want, I'll take him, because I'm going whatever. So there's a lot of harumping. So they agreed to look after, well, I mean, my mum knew all about it, but my dad didn't. And so they looked after my son for the day, and I went up. So it's all a bit hairy, really.
So. Oh, wow. So you went there on your own. Did you meet up? Yes. Oh, you met friends there?
Well, at that point, there wasn't an organised peace group. I think the peace group probably came out of that. And I went up, and I was thinking, oh, I don't know how I'm going to get there. But there was just hordes of people going there. And funny enough, when we actually did the embrace the base, I said to the woman next to me, oh, where are you from? She said, oh, I'm from Exeter. So, and it was someone I'd heard of. I didn't actually know her. So it was very strange, very muddy. I remember having my Wellington boots on. And then when I left, you know, it was really quite late. And I was thinking, oh, I don't know how I'm going to get home. And I was walking along the road, and this, I mean, I look back now, you do these things, don't you? These two men in a car, and they said, oh, do you want a lift? Where are you going? And I said, I'm trying to get back to Slough. I was a bit worried because trains are going to be packed and everything like that. And I felt a bit sorry for them, because they said, oh, we came up because, you know, men were there to support, provide childcare. And they said, we felt a bit redundant. So they were quite pleased to give me a lift. So they actually took me all the way home to my home. And then my dad's way of dealing with it was, I fought in the war, so you'd have the right to protest. So that's how we kind of resolve family conflicts.
Yeah. So did you ever stay overnight for things? Did you have a gate that you went to?
Yeah, so I got my list actually, because we were going to do a history of the peace group at one time. So I've got my memorabilia with me. The original embrace the best.
Oh yeah, that's a really well used image.
Yes. So we think that the peace group, so 1982 was embrace the base, and then 1983 for International Women's Day for Peace, we did a group got together to do all the actions for that. So I have got photos of that somewhere. And I think from having been an organising committee for the International Women's Day, so we had a whole, we started first thing at St David's down at the station, and then we did, there were some people who were involved in political theatre, and we did this, you know, the government gave these leaflets on, you know, in the event of nuclear bombs coming your way, this is what you do, how to build a shelter. So we did this building a shelter and how ridiculous the things were. And there was a procession at the end. And then I think that was the genesis of the peace group as a peace group coming together. And then I went up in July 1983 for the women's blockade. So we always used to go to Greengate. And what they used to do, I can't see, first thing in the morning, what they used to do was fly helicopters very low, so all the dust would start swirling around and it wake you up, and, you know, it was that sort of thing. And so it was just a kind of record of the day that you then took back to people. And, you know, everyone was very interested because they'd read all this stuff in the press. And I'm not a particularly aggressive sort of person or anything like that. And they'd go, you know, that's not what we think green and women are like, sort of thing. So this is a way of kind of talking through a day at Greenham, really, and what we did and everything like that. So it was trying to get the message out to other people, really. So
I mean, the Carrie Greenham home was definitely you didn't have to be at Greenham to be a Greenham woman.
Exactly. And I mean, people were, you know, I mean, we obviously got very enmeshed in the women's group and it became a big thing, but or the women's peace group, as it was. And then we did, then I'm not sure, I've got a query whether it's 83 or 84, there was the women's strike, and they did this thing. They were trying to get women to lay down. They said if men had to take responsibility for childcare and everything like that, they wouldn't be able to go to war. That was the kind of idea behind it. It wasn't our idea, this was a Greenham idea.
Yeah.
So we went up, so we stayed for the blockade in July. We went for the women's strike in September, but that might have been 84, and then in the December we went back again, and that's when there was cutting the wire, and it got quite violent. There was a lot of press. I mean, I got beaten up. My hand. I mean, a lot of women ended up in hospital. As I think there was a couple of police officers and lots of women in hospital as a result of the action. But anyway, so yes, we did stay, and we used to stay at Green Gate. Although once we stayed at Blue Gate, so.
Yeah, so you ended up in hospital rather than prison.
No, I didn't go to hospital. It was very, very spooky because, you know, we'd all been gathering and everyone, so you'd got all the soldiers behind the fence, you'd got a row of policemen in front of the fence, and then all around the base were all these women. And what happened, the agreement was, at whatever point it was going to happen, there was complete silence. And so we had like this minutes, I think it was only a minute, it felt like forever, this silence. And it was really creepy, and frightening for the soldiers and the policemen as well, because there's just this sudden absolute silence. And then we all started hollering and leapt the fence and was trying to put it down. And what happened for me was this policeman, it's when they had the old-fashioned helmets, and his helmet got knocked off just in the scrum, and he just freaked out, and he started just hitting everyone with his helmet, and he got to me, and I was holding on, and I thought, I'm not going to let go, and I took my feet off the ground, and he was just hammering down on my hand, and then he kind of caught the side of my head, at which point I thought, no, enough's enough, and I backed off. But as I say, he was just terrified, really. It's unacceptable what he did, but I understand why he did what he did. And it was horrible because it snowed and we were camping out and it was snowing and my hand had all swollen up. So I never got it treated. It's sort of healed. But so I think that was December 1983. So that was a year later. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I might come back to that, but it doesn't need to be part of the interview.
That's fine.
With some information. So, what do you have any favourite memories? You know, what was your favourite thing about being at Greenham?
Well, it sounds awful. I was a young mum on her own. It was like a holiday for me. you're not meant to say that, are you?
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, I was very lucky because there were a number, there were a number of men in CND and with the refuge. So people were always happy to childcare. So people with childcare, so I could go up to Greenham. And I know it sounds awful. It was a bit like a holiday because I, had no money and was bringing up a child on my own. And we used to have great fun. We used to travel up. We used to stop at Chicklade services. And then in the evening, we'd have a bottle of wine and lots of nice food. So, it's not the sort of things you're meant to remember. But, we were still there for a reason. But it was also just, we had quite a lot of fun memories, although it was for a serious cause, really. So, but yeah.
Great. I think it was really important. I like Emma Goldman's thing, if there's no singing and dancing at the revolution, I'm not coming. There's nothing wrong with enjoying it. I mean, because that's what helps you to cope with the being bashed over the head with a policeman's helmet.
Yes. And I think, I say to people, you can't. I went to I'm in a women's history group. They had it was about women and peace movement, and the lead speaker was someone who'd actually come to the Greenham camp much later, and her description of it, I was thinking, I can't relate to this. And I did stand up afterwards and speak, and then lots of women came up to me afterwards, and I said, you have to remember, I genuinely believed that my son would never make it to school because we'd all be wiped out of existence by then. And I was talking to a friend who wasn't political, and I said, do you remember Threads? And we were going, there was that, I can't remember the filmmaker's name, this Threads. And it was terrifying. And we were told that you'd have a 4-minute warning. And you're thinking, well, suppose he's at the nursery and I'm at home. And I can't, I mean, it's ridiculous because we're still, there's still enough nuclear weapons to blast us out of existence. But I can't, there was a genuine, absolute terror that we were going to be wiped out if this escalated. And it's hard to capture that. And that's certainly, that was my reason for going. And I'm anti-war anyway, but, you know, it was this genuine belief that we had no future. So unless we tried to do something about it, I mean, you know, fortunately it has. We're still, yeah. My son's 41 now, you know, so.
Yeah, it was a common motivator. And I think current generations can't imagine how that everyone lived in that state of fear. I mean, we're back living in a state of fear now, really, but for different reasons. But it's like that deep anxiety that you just that we lived with. And then there was the Chernobyl accident, you know. So what did you think was the worst thing about being at camp?
I don't mind. I mean, I look back and I suppose, you know, I was in my late 20s, and I think of it as very energizing. And, you know, it was positive in that you felt, you know, there was, you know, many nights I'd lie awake worried, as I say, that the world was going to end sooner or later because you just couldn't trust the international situation, really. But it felt, at least it felt you were doing something. And I kind of felt, well, even if the world does end, at least I've tried to do something. And I still believe it did lead to a sea change, all the marches, the Greenham, you know. And it's, you know, I still drive up to see my dad, and, you know, I drive past the Greenham Business Park, you know, and you think, well, you know. So.
Yeah. So you've carried on going back to the Commons since the fence came down.
Well, I just happened to go through there en route to see my dad. So, but it's just kind of, it gives me I think, gosh, you know, I remember being here, and it, you know, and I think it was fast that, you know, and, you know, there's kids going to school, and, you know, we had lots of chats with, like, the soldiers around the base, and certainly when we were there, a lot of the regiments were from Scotland, and a lot of the men, they didn't really want to be in the army, but they said, we've no choice, it's this or the dole, and I'd rather, you know, be paid and make a living and learn some skills than to be on the dole. And a lot of them actually, you know, I mean, it's easy to portray the police and army as sort of the enemy, but actually a lot of them, to be perfectly honest, weren't that unsympathetic, because a lot of them were just sat there on their own, on this boring guard control. So when women came by, they were very happy to have a chat. And, you know, one or two actually said, we support what you're doing. So, you know. So it was interesting.
Did you have any experience of being in and out of Newbury? And what did you feel was your experience of the local reaction?
No, we never really went into town, because we used to go up in like a couple of cars of us, usually one or two cars, and we would just drive straight from Exeter to the base. So I don't ever recall actually going into the town.
I think at Greengate you were quite off the road, so you probably didn't get much in the way of vigilantes.
No, I think that's why we liked it. It was, I suppose, coming from the southwest, it was nice. It was wooded and it was very pleasant. And it was like a little camping holiday, really, apart from the fact there were soldiers and you'd be sort of going to the toilet in the ferns and then you'd find someone looking at you, you know. But I think it was a more relaxed gate. And when we stayed at Bluegate, we found the atmosphere intimidating is probably too strong, but it was a very, very different atmosphere. And I think the Green Gate, it did feel quite rural, and it was quite pleasant. There was just the single gate, and then there was all the woods around, so it was quite nice.
And that gate, because it was right by the silos, it didn't really get opened very much. There wasn't a lot of traffic coming and going, was there? It was like other gates. One of the things that comes up, especially doing all this historical stuff, but it came up partly with the when there was a split. I think you probably weren't around then, but would you like to just say something about the diversity of women that was involved with Greenham? Because there's a bit of a trope that we're all white middle class middle-aged ladies or something, and yes. I wondered how you respond to that.
It's difficult. If I'm honest, I look at our group, yes, I think we would all be defined as middle class, although someone said to me, well, being a single parent means you're not middle class, but actually I was thinking, no, I don't think that's true. So yes, there was a high preponderance of people who were university educated, and as you know, Exeter is quite a middle class area anyway. So yes, I certainly think, you know, and as I say, we went to Green Gate, which, if you like, was a nice gate. And that's who we were. So I don't know. And I think the thing was, when we went up, you go in your group, and in a sense, we tended to stay in the group. And, you know, when we were staying over, we used to go and walk the whole base and chat to people on the route and everything like that. Mm. But I can't really say, I think, you know, in that sense, my experience is quite narrow, and I was very much with people like myself, in a sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I think there's no point in denying that a lot of us were. How do you think that your involvement in Greenham, did it change your life in any way? What impact did it have on your life?
Well, I don't know. I think, I mean, I did worry at one point, because we got to a stage, I mean, it became all-embracing for your life, really. And I think I was working with Women's Aid, so... I think what I'm saying is it got to the point, because my friend at the time and I, you know, in your attitude towards men, and you were getting to the point, we were working at Women's Aid, so we weren't seeing the best of men. They then set up the rape crisis line within Women's Aid at that time, just because we couldn't get any premises. I wasn't especially involved in that, but my friend was. Then we're at Greenham, and I think, although we had male, you know, there were men around us to say, people did childcare for me and things like that, it got to the point I thought, gosh, I'm seeing a very negative view of men, and particularly having a son as well. You know, I think it got to the point of being in danger of seeing all men as these violent abusers, really, which, you know, a lot of them are, but not everyone is, you know, so it's kind of...
That was your personal sort of, you know, impact in a way. And then what do you think that the broader legacy, I mean, you've talked about having the common back. Do you think about the broader legacy of Greenham? Like at the moment, you know, you're talking for the archive about this project. And have you got any other, I mean, basically, because it seems to have been lost out of memory.
Yes, I know. My friend who was a drama lecturer is in our group, and she's, you know, she said, oh, one, they were doing a student project, and one of them, she said, oh, they're doing a play about Green. They asked to do something historical, and they were doing Green, and we're going, oh my God, we're history already. But, you know, it was a few years back. I mean, it's not the first time of women coming together and being political, because you've got suffragette movements and things like that, but it was of our time. And you know, I think I liked, I mean, we did get a lot of resentment from quite a few of the men in CND, you know, why is it all about women? But I think it was really important that it was women directed, even though that created some problems. But, you know, I think it was very important that women were active and spearheaded it, particularly because it almost felt like the base was masculine and, you know, there was a feminine energy trying to impose that. Warlike masculinity, if you like, and as I say, together with that, and, you know, considering the negative press we had, you know, and the press media by and large was very, you know, everyone was categorized as being a certain type of woman and everything like that, which is why, you know, personally I thought it quite important to try and challenge that certainly amongst people I knew and even people I didn't know, to say, don't believe everything you read in paper, and actually, you know, there's a good reason why we're doing this. So that. So, you know, I like to think it had an impact, but as you say, it was interesting with the, is it the 40th anniversary walk, that you just, I was, hardly anyone was there. It's all women like us of a certain age, if you like.
Single parents as well.
Yeah, I know. And it was just like, you know, we had young lads come along and they didn't even know what it's about. And even young women, and they'd never heard of it, you know. And as you say, it's sort of, I don't know, you know, I know when you're involved in something, you feel that it's really important. But actually, I think, you know, there was a lot of things that happened, and it was an amazing thing for those women to do, to walk to the base. It was fantastic. So,
So is there anything else you want to mention? You've obviously been busy with your personal archiving, with your photos.
We never actually got to do it. We talked about doing a history of the group, and we were all going to pull together all our different photos and things like that. And kind of, I got as far as making a list. And as I say, I think the thing was, it wasn't only Greenham, because we organised actions, like we had Morwenstow, and there were a lot of arrests there, and it got into the Guardian and things like that. We always did a thing for, obviously that was with CND as well, Hiroshima Day and Nagasaki and things like that. There was the Women's Walk for Peace. So there was, as well as Greenham, there was a lot of offshoot activities actually within the local area. So,
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I really like that you said about the helicopters, because for all the pictures and the animations or whatever that are coming out now, you have, it doesn't tell you how noisy it was.
Yes.
And especially if you were at a gate that was on the main road as well, the traffic, the lorries, the school run, you know. That's really nice that you've mentioned that. Do you have any, have you still got friends from the women that you were involved with Greenham with?
Unfortunately, we've all gone our separate ways. So I'm not in contact with any of them anymore, which is a real shame. But we all moved, I suppose, as it happens, everyone moves to different parts of the country and you lose contact. So funny enough, I do know people in Bristol who were part of the women's movement, but I wasn't part of their group at the time. So, you know, and they were all the people who went to Greenham, but they had a very different experience.
Oh, well, it's great though, to just revisit your own personal involvement. And that's one of the things that the walk helps to instigate.
Yes. But as you say, it was kind of sad in a way, because you say it is almost like a forgotten history now. It's sort of disappeared from view, and I guess, I don't know why.
Academia is one factor, you know, not flavour of the generation anymore.
And it's funny, I did, because I'm, it wasn't my work, but I do history, and in fact, as I say, we've got this women's history group, and one of the women in there, her thesis for her PhD was all about Greenham, so I gave her all my memorabilia, which is probably why it's all, I've got it, and all my spare ribs, but but they're fascinating, you know, when you look back, you think, oh my goodness. So as I say, I've got all this memorabilia. I don't know what to do with it, but I'll see what I can put online.
Pick some stuff out, and you need to take a photograph of it and then send it in. I think a lot of us are in that position. We've got all these old newsletters, and there are actually quite a few Greenham archives around the country. And so I think it's really important that there's more than one.
Yes, and the trouble is you look and you think, oh, no one will want this. But, you know, some of it, you look and you think, oh, gosh, it was of its time. And I mean, you know, all of it's like hand, you know, hand. I did this, actually, we did a war toy. We boycotted our local toy shop, you know. And it's all, I don't know, because if you know Exeter, it was that one, I think it's John Lewis now. There was Debenhams, and then there was this toy shop, and they were selling this Rambo thing. So we war toy. What do you buy when you buy war? You know, and it was all hand and photocopied, and you know the computer stuff you've got now. It was very. I can't remember. I think it was the Women's Strike Week where they had all the numbers for like the American Embassy and things like that, and you had to. They were getting people to phone in, so they're blocking the phone lines. I mean, it was all funny stuff. But, you know, my aunt, who was probably in her 70s then, she went down to her phone booth and phoned up and was, you know, so people did get involved in little ways that, you know.
That's why it was so big, though, isn't it? Because there was just, like, so many entry points and so many options. You didn't have to get beaten up and arrested, you know. It all counted. Yeah, and then that walk, the Southwest Women's Walk.
Well, I organised the extra bit of that. That was May 84.
It came started in Plymouth, didn't it? It started in Plymouth and it came all up the Southwest.
Yes. Well, I was responsible for coordinating the extra bit of it, and I was doing all the phoning and checking that everything got sorted. So, yes, the Women's Walk for Peace, May 84. Yeah.
Oh, great. Oh, great.
Yes, I always remember that. I shouldn't say this because I'm a huge ice skating fan, and Torvald and Dean were all at the Olympics, and they were just coming on, and I got all these women, and I was trying to watch their gold medal performance and sort out this piece off. So.
Oh, brilliant! Oh, brilliant!
So we just crossed over at a point. Did you go to women's? Exeter Women's Peace Group meetings.
I don't remember peace group meetings at Exeter Women's Centre by at the 80.
Well, then we had the Women's Peace Group, which was the core that I think those mid 80s we organised. But probably by 85, I think it was disintegrating a bit. Some people had moved away. I know I started my training September 85, which is when I left. Everything because I couldn't study and bring out the child and everything. So yes, I think 84, after 84, it petered out a bit for me. I did, if there was an action or something, I'd go, but I'm not sure I went up to Greenham much. We did go, I think 85, and we did this decorating the fence, and everyone decorated the fence, and there was some fantastic stuff. So I've got pictures of that somewhere. So, and I think. The thing working for Women's Aid, it was seen as a you know, you was allowed much time off as you like to go up to Green, and it was seen as an extension of, you know, fighting male abuse, really. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. It was a great pulling together of so many different issues in a way. We got much else to say?
Not really. I mean, I didn't know. I'm trying to think. We think I've got. Oh yes, there we go. 10 million women on strike for 10 days, September the 20th to September the 30th, 1984. And that was, and it said the last 2 weeks of September, the most massive NATO exercise ever will take place in Germany. More British soldiers than ever will participate. The NATO military machine will virtually occupy West Germany, tanks in the streets, forests and fields, men in silver suits playing chemical warfare games. Europe is not their playground. Women walk out in protest, and they were releasing men in the territorial army to participate. And it says, who makes this possible? Who takes over their work when they've gone? Who stays behind? We women. And that's where we're saying, we won't stand for it any longer. And they were trying to get 10 million women to go on strike for 10 days.
But that's I mean, all the newsletters, I think there's you're in a women's history group, you know, this is would be interesting way to do some of that work.
Yes, I'll coordinate. And the other thing is, I remember, you know, we went up to Newby, my friend got arrested, so we went up for the the trials or whatever they called them. And, you know, she went to prison for a week. You know, I'm sure lots of people did.
Yeah, loads.
But, yes, that was an experience as well. But, yes, I suppose they're things. And as you say, I maybe look through this and put it in some sort of order. And as I say, it's difficult to know what's of interest and what isn't of interest, really. No.
I think anything that's got a date on it and is properly in a, you know, his chronicle, what's the word, you know, where it's in time order. Yeah. Because, I mean, what I'm finding, I listen to interviews a bit, but also doing interviews. Not everyone's got accurate. I mean, none of us have got accurate memories.
But, I know.
But dates cannot be refuted. But that's evidence.
But it's interesting, isn't it? And I don't know if you found, you know, as I say, I was there in the early part and then I stopped 84, 85. And then I think people's experience later on was different to what I experienced. So it's, you know, there's quite a gamut, really. But yes, I don't think it impacted on my life in the same way it seemed to have impacted on yours, because I then knuckled down and became a health professional, and I think, you know, I wanted to bring up my son in a more conventional way. So, you know, but I'm glad I did it, and I'm sort of, you know, I still go on marches and demos and stuff, so, you know, you never quite lose that. So.
No, absolutely. And you have to do what's appropriate at your time of life.
Yes, yes.
You know, to be honest, I don't go on protests anymore. I sit at home and do interviews.
Well, no, it's interesting. And as I say, the Exeter connection, our paths probably crossed at some point. But
probably on the side of the motorway, hitching a lift or on a coach. Because, I mean, that was part of it as well, wasn't it? Organising coaches and...
Well, we were lucky because, as I say, our friend worked for Penguin Books and had a company car, so we used to travel up there in luxury. But it seemed luxury to us, you know. And you know, there'd be five or six of us all squashed into the car, or else someone else had a Mini and we'd all squash in. But that was part of the fun of it, really.
And actually, I mean, even that comment is quite pertinent, because I don't think people nowadays realise how few of us had cars.
Yes, or telephones. There was no mobile phones.
Yeah, all telephones. Absolutely. But somehow...
We used to have, like, telephone cascades. So people who had phones would phone, and then people who didn't have phones, because I didn't have a phone, but they'd phone someone who had a phone who'd then live near me or something and go and let me know, you know. So we... Yeah. As you say, it's amazing how we, you know, these days people can't even imagine. In fact, I've got to say, I can't remember what it was like, but I mean, you know, I didn't have a phone until later on. Actually, probably by then I did have a phone, but I didn't in the early days. But we did all manage to coordinate actions and things like that. And that's why it's frustrating. I'm sad to have lost touch with people, because you would sit there and we all remember different things, but it got a bit diverse. And as I say, we were going to do this history, which is why I wrote down the stuff, and then that never happened, and then we've all sort of floated out different ways. So some men were a bit, it seemed, they were a bit resentful, but you know, I was very lucky. You know, I had one chap, he used to do the childcare, and that enabled me to go to Greenham, you know, and he'd come and look after my son, and it was nice for my son to have that male company as well, so it worked at all levels, really. And I think they felt that was their way of giving something to, you know, if they couldn't go up themselves, then that was their way of supporting the peace camp, really.
Absolutely, it was.
And it always used to come back smelling of smoke.
Yeah, I loved that.
Oh, the fires, yeah. I mean, it sounds awful. I do have happy memories of it. It was, you know, and I think that camaraderie was something that was nice, really. And I think, as I say, it was very intense, you know, it was only really 3 years, but it was so intensive, and you were just forever planning actions. And I got to visit the nuclear bunker in County Hall. And it was so funny, because they had that, as I say, that Threads film, which was about you know, the 4-minute warning, everything like that. So there was the bloke who was in charge of nuclear preparations for Devon. So I wrote to him and I said, I'm a very concerned mother. So he said, oh, come and have a look at our preparations for what happens in the event of the 4-minute warning and all this. So I had to go to a charity shop and buy, like, try and look normal. So I had to try and disguise my henna hair and everything like that. And I went along, so I had to do all this normal. It was so funny. So they'd got this nuclear control room under County Hall, you know, on Topsham Road.
Yeah.
We've got this bunch of keys to get into the room. We couldn't work out which key to use. And I was thinking, well, if we've only got 4 minutes, we haven't got very long.
Find the key.
No, I think the thing was we were thinking of planning an action there, and actually it was like Dad's army. I said, I don't think we need to plan an action. So inept,
you know. Oh, that's hysterical. Oh,
but I'm trying to keep a straight face, and I was trying to be act normal.
Oh God.
Oh dear. But anyway.
Okay.
Lovely.
Well, yeah, you've got a lot of ideas there, and but I think it's part of our responsibility as older women to do this.
Yeah,
if we can.
I know, and to capture the history, because, you know, particularly in the modern world, I as a historian, I think, well, what's going to happen to archives and things like that? You know, because so much is electronic, and you think,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, Susan, this has been so interesting. Okay.
Okay. Take care.